This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces, hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Podstaff. With me today, I have Mr. Gary Hominick. Gary is a licensed professional counselor and a certified sex addiction therapist who brings over a decade of experience in the mental health field to his private practice. He specializes in helping men and couples navigate the fallout of infidelity, pornography and sex addiction, trauma and relationship challenges. He also focuses on relationship enrichment once the reparation is in a good place. Thank you so much for coming on today, Gary. I'll open it up to have you share a little bit about your background and maybe about your private practice as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm glad we're able to find a time to do this. And as he said, I'm Gary. I am the sole counselor in my own private practice, Aletheia Counseling TX. As you mentioned, I work largely with men who got caught doing something they weren't supposed to be doing. One of the, I think, misconceptions about the guys that I work with is that they're bad guys. They did something, you know, and that makes them a bad person. And that's a lot of the beliefs they come to me with. But the fact that they said, I messed up and I need help and I'm asking for help is one thing that most people don't do. And so for that reason alone, for someone to say, I need help, I messed up and I want a better life for me and my partner, for me, that's the most important thing. Not did they mess up, but are they willing to do something about it? I've been in private practice for almost 5 years now, after working in community mental health for 8.5 years, and just kind of made the switch during COVID times. It made sense. I was getting burnt out my last job, had an opportunity, and took the plunge. So now I see mostly men. I see women too, but the people who reach out to me, usually guys, and you know, just help them, like Michael said, hey, they want to know why they did what they did. And they want to know how to fix it. And we get to work. And then, like you said, a lot of counselors, they say, okay, well, we're good. You're not having panic attacks anymore. You and your wife aren't fighting. Okay, what next? You know, like one guy say, hey, Gary, I'm good. We haven't had a fight in 2 weeks. And I say, is that the only thing you're measuring your marriage on? And he goes, well, yeah, we used to fight all the time. So yeah. A month later, he goes, Gary, I'm not happy. I'm not happy in my marriage. I'm like, yeah, because a lack of fighting doesn't equal happy marriage. In fact, good marriages fight. Good marriages have conflict. It's not do you have conflict, it's how you have conflict. So I definitely pick up on that enrichment part with them because, like I said, most counselors, I won't say most, a lot, do stop there. Panic attack's gone. Fight's gone. Good. Discharge. Get out of here. Bring on the next person. What problems do you have? I do try to focus on what problems do you have, how can I help, but also what goals do you have and how can I help you get there as well.
You've probably seen, I've had some therapists on here before. They've all had something unique like you do about just kind of your description where you actually you focus on that reparation. I'd like to hear a little bit about that. But, you know, before the deep end with that one, I wanted to kind of talk about the anatomy of addiction and the most common addictions that you see. I know yours is more specialized towards sex addictions, but anything you can share for our listeners to kind of better understand where some of maybe your clients may be coming from and how they start to repair that train of thought that has been an addictive habit for so long.
Absolutely. And so the first thing I'll say is there's a lot, and those that are listening to this that are therapists, I hear like, oh, it's not an addiction. You can't be addicted to sex. You can't be addicted to porn. I'm not here to argue. Some of my guys resonate with that term, and it answers a lot of questions for them. Some of my guys say, look, Gary, I just got caught doing something. It's not like I was doing it all the time, you know, that kind of thing, but I do need help. So for my guys, I don't care what you call it, whatever works for you, whatever resonates with you, I'm going to go with that. I'm not going to be a, you must admit that this is an addiction. You have no power over it. Like I said, some guys, that makes a lot of sense. Gary, I did feel like I had no control over something. I knew it was bad. I couldn't stop doing it versus, yeah, I got caught and I never did it again. Not an addiction, but my marriage is not in a great place. For my guys that it does kind of fall under the addiction mindset, it's usually had a pretty severe unmet need, and they found early on something that scratched that itch, and then they just kind of got used to it. Just like I know to reach over to my left for my cup of water over here, they know where to go to when they're feeling a certain way, and they do it over and over and over. It becomes so habitual that the addiction mind that says like, oh, it's not that bad, I'll stop anytime, I'm not hurting anybody, whatever excuses or justifications we make up, over time make perfect sense in my client's head until they get caught. And then they go, how could I have gotten there? It's evolution, not revolution. And so it is one of those, I have something that I want. My guys either don't express their needs or they don't know what their needs are and therefore can't express them, but they know they need something. And if they get that dopamine rush by watching a video, by talking to someone who makes them feel a certain way, they'll do it until they're brushing under the rug, until there's a bump in the rug, they trip and fall and they get caught. And so I would probably say in my case, so maybe 60, 40, maybe 65, 35, non-addiction versus resonate with the addiction piece. And yeah, like I said, wherever they are, that's where I'm going to meet you at, and that's where we can get to work.
No, absolutely. I think that's very interesting. And controversial question that I want to ask is sex addiction cheating if it's not physical with another person, if it's pornography? Because I think that that's a controversial topic to where some people will say, well, I didn't sleep with anyone, or I didn't cheat on you with someone. I just looked at a video. Do most of the spouses that are on the other end of that consider that cheating?
That's a great question, and the answer is it depends. Every couple has a different idea of what infidelity is. And one definition I heard, I believe this was Rob Weiss on his podcast, Sex, Love, and Addiction, he said, we consider cheating keeping any profound secret. So the fact that I ate some of the Skittles from that the girl's Halloween candy and didn't tell my wife about it, that's not cheating on her. The fact that I've been seeing masseuses or I've been, watching porn, that kind of thing, and she doesn't know and it would really upset her, okay, then that may fall under the umbrella of infidelity cheating. The thing I always tell my guys is, would you do it with them in the room? If the answer is no, then we shouldn't be doing it. And that's gonna be a conversation. I've got some couples. I had one guy's wife said, well, Gary, I watch porn too. I just don't watch it the way he watches it. I'll watch it every few weeks, maybe. He's watching it every day for multiple hours a day. She said, so I'm okay with it. I'm just not okay with the amount. And all the way up to the incredibly strict, oh, you looked at another woman? So, I'm not gonna go to a restaurant and do this whenever I'm ordering food. Oh, you must have been thinking about this. So everything in between, where open relationships, I'm okay with pornography. I had one client said, my wife's okay with going to strip clubs with me, but she's not okay with me going to strip clubs by myself. Okay, as long as we're on the same page, it's not gonna count.
Example where the wife says, I'm okay with it every 2 or 3 weeks, but not every day. If someone's truly on the addiction end of it, like we talked about at the beginning, is that possible for them? Because it almost seems like you're saying to a daily alcoholic, hey, no, I'm fine if you just drink every 3 weeks. I don't see that being overly successful.
Possible? Yeah. Likely? No. Like I tell my guys, if I had if I had to give an absolute answer, should you watch pornography or should you not? The answer is no, right? Even if your wife's okay with it, the best sex involves physical and emotional connection. And if my connection to sexual releases is some, porn actress on a screen that, I can switch through. If I don't like this scene, I can go to something else. If I don't like this masseuse, I can go somewhere else. This escort will do whatever I ask her to do, even if she doesn't want to, we lose the emotion part. And for a lot of my guys, that works great because they've got some maybe avoiding attachment styles. So I can let someone close, get what I want, but not too close. And so broad brushstroke, I'm gonna say no, I wouldn't recommend it. Is it possible? Yeah, but it can get tricky. And I've heard stories of people who in open relationships, they're bringing a third person into it, and then partner A and partner B both grow closer to the third person and further away from each other. Well, they were both on the same page. They both wanted to bring a third person to the relationship, but they didn't realize it was going to pull them apart from each other. Okay, possible. Yeah, likely, probably not.
Is that common that you see people get away from that monogamous point of view in their relationship?
I don't have a lot of experience with it in my practice, so I can't really answer that question. The ones that I have worked with, you got to follow the rules. I mean, there are rules to bring having a secondary. What does that involve? What do we tell if kids are involved? What do we tell them? So there's just a lot more moving parts. So as long as everyone's on the same page, they're having these really good levels of communication, understanding, empathy, it can definitely work, but it's a lot of moving parts. And so most of my guys are monogamous, and at most, their wives are okay with them watching some, or maybe going to a strip club together, something like that.
But moving on, I kind of want to get into the beginning phase of it, the underlying shame on the person who is doing the act. And then that betrayal feeling, that relationship is best, is not existing right now. And how do you even begin on the partner's end when they figure out to start that reparation?
As far as the shame piece, don't. It's not going to fix it. You know, there's some shame-based cultures. There's a colleague of mine, he grew up in a Chinese family, and he said everything was just shame-based. He said it didn't work, but it did make my sex addiction completely high acuity. He said it cost me a marriage. He said, you name it, I was doing it. And he said, it was shame, shame, shame. So I treated myself with shame, and it only kept me in this shame cycle. And usually it's I feel a certain way and I do something about it. And I get that release, and then the shame, the guilt. And then all these negative emotions push me right back into the place I was in the first place that caused me to go, I could do this. This sounds good. I always tell my guys, you got to show yourself some compassion. That's not condoning what happened, but it is saying, hey, let me cut myself some slack, understand what's going on here, and then make some changes. But the guys that treat them, my guys that treat themselves with high levels of shame and guilt take longer to get better. Bottom line.
I can see that, because at that point, it's more about what action are you going to take? And that shame gap is probably what takes people back down an even deeper hole.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some, there's nothing that I can do, nor would I do, to say, hey, here's what you do to have no shame or guilt whatsoever. You will have an appropriate level of that negative emotion. Emotions like tools. Do I need a sledgehammer for this, or do I need just a regular hammer? I need to get this thing into the ground. So what's the right answer? Well, how much force do I need? This much. Okay, then the sledgehammer is your answer. Well, the sledgehammer, another thing, is going to break things. So some shame and guilt is going to be there, but you're right. Too much, like a sledgehammer for a regular hammer job, is just going to cause more harm.
The next thing I wanted to ask you is the, you know, reclaiming of that sense of self-worth on both parties. So like, what's the time frame that you see? I'm sure it ranges, but maybe an average time frame and maybe some initial first steps that maybe our listeners who are not at the point yet where they are going to reach out to a therapist, but maybe struggling with this. What are some tips that they can start to begin that reclaiming of self-worth?
Time frame? Guys ask me, Gary, how long? Man, I can't answer that question for you. I had one guy who within a couple of months was just, I think, in a very, very good place from a long history of abuse and enmeshment and whatnot. And then some guys who, their words, Gary had a good childhood, and it's taken him over a year just to kind of get past that little hump that other guy did in 2 months. So I used to tell people there's no time frame. Everyone's a little bit different, and that's fine. One of the first things that needs to happen is, well, depends on where you are at, but a lot of times it's crisis, stabilization, and repair. You know, what do we need to do to make sure that you and your partner both feel safe? And like I tell my guys, right after discovery, you kind of give up some of your rights. They do have to come back at some point. You can't live in a prison forever, right? But you can't say, hey, it really bothered me when you did this. Oh yeah, well, yeah, I caught you doing this, so F you. And I've had clients, partners tell them that. But we do have to get to a place to say, hey, I really didn't like it that you yelled at the kids. Or, hey, the other day I was trying to tell you something and you brushed me off, or you wouldn't put your phone down and I didn't feel listened to. And the partner needs to be able to say, okay, and I'm so sorry, that wasn't my intention. And yeah, I apologize. I own up to the fact that sometimes I am buried in my phone when you're talking to me, and I convince myself that I can play solitaire on my phone and listen at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Let's find a better way for us to communicate. And so, yeah, there's no timeline necessarily. But one of the big things that I talk to my guys about, because they ask this, why? Gary, why did I do this? I know when I was doing it, I knew it was wrong. And to that, I say, no, you didn't. If you knew, you wouldn't do it. But I use the analogy of a puddle of water on the ground. Would you, if there was a puddle of water in your office there, would you drink from it if you were thirsty? No, Gary, I'm going to go get a drink, or maybe I brought a drink in here, you know, that kind of thing. Now, Michael, what if you hadn't had any water for 2.5 days and you're walking down the street and you see a puddle of water on the ground? Well, you're on all fours lapping it up. And then a day later, your stomach hurt. Well, I knew it was. No, you didn't. You were in such a severe unmet need space or deprivation or depression or anxiety that the parts of your brain that said, hey, think about what this is going to do tomorrow, are dormant. Your prefrontal cortex goes dormant when you're in these high stress states. And so understanding that, that's where some of the self-compassion comes in. You acted very normally in an abnormal situation. Someone said, Gary, my only worth was my ability to please others sexually. And I found that out early on when I was sexually abused. So to that guy, it's completely understandable that they are reaching out to these sexual venues, because I have no other way of identifying self-worth. You have other ways. You have other ways. I always tell my guys, you should be concerned with what they write on your obituary. I haven't seen, I'm sure there's some out there, but I haven't seen an obituary that says, here lies Gary, he worked a lot. Here lies Gary, he made a lot of money. Here lies Gary, he had a boat. No. Here lies Gary, he was a good man, a good father. He cared for others, he was funny. He loved his daughters more than anything, and he made the world a better place. Okay, that's where I'm going to try to work towards. And that's where my self-worth needs to be tied into. A lot of my guys, they never had that. They weren't told. A lot of them were punished for doing poorly, but never praised for doing well, or only praised for achieving. And so they had that conditional love from their parents. And so again, it's a million different things, but it all boils down to this. I don't feel good about myself and I want to feel something, or I don't want to feel the way I'm feeling. And these 2 hours I can spend on this porn site or talking to this OnlyFans model will get me out of that headspace for a while. And I'll deal with the problem later. And then they over and over and over
I
again.
think it's so interesting that you said if I'm doing something that I morally know to be wrong in that moment, if I'm doing it, then I didn't think it was wrong in that moment. Is that kind of what you were alluding to?
Yeah, I mean, like that makes sense now. I mean, have you ever woken up with a hangover like, oh, I wish I hadn't had that drink last night? Well, last night when you had that drink and your friend said, hey, another round on me, made sense. You don't want to say, oh, no, sorry, guys. Oh, come on, Gary, let's get it. No, yeah, sure. It makes sense in that moment. And our brains can't, I always tell people, I wish we could do the Saved by the Bell. So Zach Morris, one of the, if not the main character in the show, every now and then he would go, time out, and all the characters would freeze. And he'd go, Kelly asked me to go to the dance, but I really wanted to ask Jesse. And he was able to pause time, think about what he wanted to do, and then he'd go, time in. Hey, Kelly, I'm so sorry I can't go to the dance with you. I already had plans on asking Jesse. That'd be great. Obviously, we can't do that. But if we could, we could stop and say, wait, do I want to get this other drink? Wait, is it really going to help me if I log onto this porn site? That kind of thing. We don't have that.
Do you see it work to, I've heard stuff like this before, just for precautions in place during the reparation phase of something like a sex addiction. Having like a minimalist phone at that point, or maybe I know that there's apps out there now where you can send your wife a notification to ask her to approve an app. Is that very common and does it work?
It's common and it works at the start. That's a behavioral intervention. But if I really, really want to blank, drink, watch porn, smoke something, and you just take it away from me, I still want to. And I don't know if you heard the term dry drunk. It's like, great, I haven't had a drink in 2 weeks. Yeah, because there's no alcohol in the house, Gary. Are you still sad? Oh yeah, still sad. Still anxious. Still feel this, that kind of thing. Okay, well, you've just taken it away. And I had one guy say, hey, Gary, I haven't watched porn in 2 weeks. That's great. He said, I'm getting blackout drunk 3 nights a week, though. I said, okay, well, this is what we call cross addiction. The thing that was driving you to watch the pornography has not been addressed, and you're still trying to escape the way that you're feeling. And so I tell him, I said, that's something, yes, that I do recommend if that helps rebuild trust from the partner, that they can say, this, this, and this. But I've had guys say, Gary, if it wasn't on there, I'd do it. Or I know how to get around it. So yeah, covenant eyes, things that I had one guy in the middle of the session. He was, oh, Gary, hold on, hold on. He had to go get his wife to put in the Wi-Fi password because it clicked off Wi-Fi onto his signal, and he said, okay, there you go. Sorry, she has to this, this, and this. So yes, a lot of my guys do that. You have access to my computer, bank statements, that kind of thing. But at some point, a happy, healthy relationship or marriage has to occur in the way that your phone goes off and your spouse doesn't go, who's that? They go, okay, I trust you completely. And whoever that is, I trust that it's not what you were doing before.
Do you find it common that people are able to reach that point?
I have a lot of guys get to that place. Yeah. Yeah.
Their
Like we'll
spouses
do.
do too?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The guys, my guys usually get there first, and that's common where they say, Gary, I have no concern that I'm going to do that ever again, but my wife doesn't share it. And I said, that's normal. If they trust you, then it's shame on them. That's the mindset. If I believe you and I trust you, and you do it again, then it's my fault, which isn't the case. But a lot of times that's the protection they put in their head. So I do have to put that wall up, and then like, Gary, she keeps looking for this. She doesn't trust me. I say, it's not as much that she doesn't trust you. It's that she's scared. That's a defense.
She's got trauma at that point, right?
She had trauma at the beginning, but betrayal trauma, and this is one of the big things. One of the difficult things I have is on the side of the guys that I work with is your partner needs to go see a counselor. Why I didn't do anything wrong? I didn't say you did anything wrong. But if you think going to a counselor is when you only when you do something wrong, then you don't know what counseling's for. you're going through betrayal trauma. And I was talking to another colleague of mine, and I said, you know, they said, oh, this, and she goes, bullshit. You're exhibiting PTSD symptoms. Go to therapy. I can't say my clients can't say it to their spouses, but
Well, is that why
it's
you see
true.
people go to like in an AA setting or an NA setting for Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, for those who don't know what that is? People go to Al-Anon, like family members go to Al-Anon because they're trying to heal with them. And it's not because they did anything wrong, it's because they're trying to understand and support and also grow and go through steps and things like that for their own self. And then they want to bring that into the relationship. So is that the same concept?
Yeah. I mean, there's I network with a lot of APSATs, partners of sex addiction therapists, and they, I mean, they have betrayal trauma specialists, they have betrayal trauma groups. You know, basically, hey, yeah, you didn't do anything wrong, but you do have a problem. You know, in my CSAT supervisor, Dan Drake, used this example years ago when I was becoming a CSAT. He said, if you're driving and someone runs a red light and hits you, you didn't cause it, but you do have a problem, and you do have to go get your car fixed. And you can't just say, it's not my fault, it's not my fault, and your car uncrinkles itself. Go. I just had my car get into a wreck. Some guy pulled in my lane, completely his fault. I still had to take it to the body shop. I still had to wait. I still had to drive around in a rental car. I still had to do all those things despite having done nothing wrong. I didn't
How are
want
they
my.
able to reach that point where they do want to actually dive into therapy of their own, or maybe do couples therapy with their spouse?
Couples is a little bit more common. The individual on the partner side is less common. And it's unfortunate because it would expedite the process. It would make it easier, better, faster, stronger connection. But for various reasons, I know this and that. And some of my guys say, look, Gary, I've done so much work on myself. I feel like I'm a good husband, this and that. My partner has issues. She had issues before discovery. But she has issues that she refuses to acknowledge. She can't take ownership for things, or she can't, ever admit that she also had some responsibility in that fight that we had the other night. So she needs it, but it's a, well, I don't do anything wrong. I don't need to go to therapy. Therapy is for people who messed up. That's
Do you
one
see them
slice of the
kind of
pie.
saying, I'm almost putting themselves on a pedestal if their spouse had an active, open addiction that was exposed, versus this person may not have this big thing that they're struggling with individually, but maybe some common things like pride, ego, etc., really.
Yeah, it's my personal opinion that every single person on this planet should see a therapist at least once, even if it's just for a few sessions to, hey, Gary, I just want to, I had one guy, he had six sessions until he was moving out of the state. And he said, I just want to kind of get myself in a better place for the relationship that I'm in. He said, we have some fights, some conflict, but not bad, but I think there's a better way. I said, yeah. Great, let's do some enrichment work, maybe some conflict resolution stuff, but the enrichment work is there. But the catch is, I've never seen a relationship where one person, one party of the relationship is a complete angel and perfect relationship partner. Never happened. And so, yeah, just because yours isn't as bad as the other person doesn't mean that you can also grow yourself.
I'd be interested to know, what are some common non-negotiables that they both agree on while they're both dealing with different things, but going to therapy maybe together?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's if I'm going to therapy, you also need to go to therapy. Or, yeah, we need to do couples therapy, or you need to, and sometimes we get a little more of the nitty-gritty, you need to stop getting so defensive, or you need to open up when I talk to you, or when I'm hurting, you need to hold my hand and not walk out of the room. And if you're not willing to do those, then I'm not, which I wish it wasn't like that because that's more transactional. If I'm going to therapy, I should want to go to therapy for me, for my partner, that kind of thing, not as a, well, I'm here because my partner said that I have to, and if I don't, then that person's not going to get as much. It's not going to be genuine. So I don't see a ton of that, just for the reason that if they're doing it, it needs to be for the right reasons.
I'd like to move on to that point where we say, you know, the reparation has happened. Going back to that original statement you made about, hey, everything's good. We haven't fought in 2 weeks, or I haven't watched porn in a month, or just whatever it may be. Talk to us about some of that daily reparation, or those daily reparational practices that are good to have ongoing once the issue has been solved.
Perfect. Yeah. So one of the biggest things, I was listening to this podcast and it was a relationship expert, and they said, what's the number one thing that couples don't do that they should be doing? I've got my pen and paper ready. I'm like, what is it? I'm gonna steal it. And what they said, I was already having my clients do. I'm like, oh, at least I'm on the right path. check-ins, and they said something that was not new to me, but I think is new to a lot of people, especially the last part. So if things are rough, you and your partner need to be doing 1 to 2 check-ins a week. If things are okay, once every week or two. If things are great, once a month. And say, well, why once a month if things are going great? Because you want them to keep going great, right? If you accelerate up to 70 miles an hour, you don't take your foot off the gas. You keep it on. You speed up sometimes, you slow down sometimes. You have to keep working until you get to your destination. And I always tell my people the destination here is when one of you dies. You always have to do this. And so doing these check-ins, I'm a big fan of the Thanos check-in. I got an article for that on my website. I didn't make the Thanos check-in thing, but I do have an article that kind of goes over what that is, how I like people to do it. But it goes over some of the things that people don't really cover in check-in. So I do feelings, an affirmation or appreciation, need, ownership, and some type of struggle slash sobriety. When we do check-ins, you, hey Michael, how are you? Oh, I'm good. Okay, well, how's work? Oh, it's good. Okay. Okay, do you want to go have dinner? Hey, Michael, what's a need that you have right now that is not being met that I can help meet? I just don't feel very appreciated at work. And Gary, I know you tell me all the time this, this, and this, but maybe if you could do it like this, that would help out. Oh yeah, I can absolutely do that. And I did that with my wife one time. She asked me if I felt appreciated, and I said, sometimes. And she got upset. And I said, if I were to stop and think about it, I know you appreciate me. I think it would be helpful if I heard it more. She goes, oh, I can do that.
I have a therapist that I see every 2 weeks. A lot of times, I don't think I have anything to talk about, but since she's structured in her approach to get her clients to talk about their feelings, those are usually the sessions that go to the very end of the session because I thought that I was good, and she had a structured approach to pull that stuff out of me and then work on it for the next time.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I remember this one time was a case manager when my clients came up and he told me something, and I said, now, you told me that story last week. Did that happen again? Or are you repeating the story from last week? And he goes, oh, we got caught. And I said, do you think you need a problem to see me? Oh, no. No, if things are going well and you want them to keep going well, we're going to switch into maybe more of a solution focus or a maintenance stage kind of thing. And so yeah, when my guys do kind of get to that stage, I may ask the question of how connected do you feel with your wife? If you went on the newlywed game, how many answers would you get right? Do you have a satisfying sex life? Do y'all feel like roommates and give each other a kiss every now and then? Okay, well then let's get to work. Let's get to work. And a lot of the things that I do, depending on where my guys are, it's like, hey, now I'm gonna switch from this book to this book. And we're going to talk about how you can connect with your wife and really understand what's going on in her inner world and vice versa, her understand on yours, so you can both be the best supports for each other.
After those repairs are made and the issue has been solved, it hasn't been happening, the addiction or whatever it may be has not been happening. That couple continues to work on themselves throughout the next 6 months or so. Do you ever see like them get so deep into the repairs that shame creeps back up because they're realizing like, oh shit, that was actually really bad, and they didn't understand the weight of it at the beginning.
Yeah, usually on the person doing the betrayal. A lot of times this happens, hey, yeah, Gary, my wife said she forgives me, but I can't. I can't forgive myself. This happened the other day. I drove by this place, I saw this thing, I smelled this thing. I went to type in the computer and I started typing the site that I used to go to a year and a half later. Oh my God. And so yeah, sometimes that shame does creep in. Which is fine. I'm not concerned that does shame creep in. What do you do with it? Do you understand it? Do you get curious? Do you ask questions? Do you put it in your container and bring it to me and we open your container up during therapy and talk about it? So yeah, it does happen where it does kind of creep in, later. Maybe sometimes the partner kind of has a, are they doing it again? Great, let's have a conversation. Let's have a conversation so I can talk to you about, no, I'm not doing it again. But if that's a concern of yours, something's going on. Can we talk about it? So yeah, it does creep up, and I don't experience a lot of like, oh my gosh, I can't. I'm fully understanding what I really did later on. That usually happens pretty quickly, at least with my guys. But yeah, shame and guilt can creep up sometime a year, two, three, four later. Great, let's deal with it.
Yeah, I experienced that in my own life just for random things where, maybe I was really rude to a family member or something like that, or lashed out at someone, or and it was months ago, and that person forgave me the day after, and we talked about it, and then I'm having kind of a sad day where intrusive thoughts are winning, and that shame will creep back up from 6 months ago. It doesn't even have to be a big thing. It could be a little conversation that you had where you said something you didn't mean to someone that you love.
Yeah, where your thoughts go, energy flows. So if I do have that thought or that reminder of, and oh, stop, Gary, stop, stop. You've done what you need to do to apologize to your wife that this, and this. You've proven to her that you're not doing this anymore. But that's normal. Those things will pop in. And on the other side, I tell people, if this happened and you're like, Gary, I'm feeling no ill feeling towards myself whatsoever, I'm gonna say, really? None? You don't feel bad at all? You don't have any remorse whatsoever? No. Just like with baking a cake, every ingredient is important. It's just how much of each ingredient.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think this has been really, really helpful for those who, may be struggling with anything addiction-wise, or just, trouble with the spouse or anything like that. So, is there anything else that you would like to say to maybe that guy who's listening that is struggling? He has always been against therapy. Maybe his family was not emotional at all, and or her. What would you say to those people who maybe should take that bold but very necessary step in reaching out to someone like you or just anyone in their circle for maybe the beginning of help?
That's a great question. So there are two ways that I'll address this. One is the sublimation by fantasy method. Let me take the negative feelings I'm feeling right now, the fact that my marriage isn't quite where I really want it to be. I do find myself pouring that heavier drink, checking in, watching something I shouldn't, that kind of thing. And let me fantasize about what a great, good, happy, healthy marriage looks like. What would it feel like if I fully trusted my wife? If I felt safe? If I felt like I could go up to her for anything? And be met with, thank you for having the courage to tell me that. What can I do for you? Now I'm upset that you did what you did, but I am happy that you're honest with me. Oh man, Gary, that sounds like a great life. Great. Do you know how to do that? Nope. Well, guess what? There are people out there that are trained in this. And so if your life isn't exactly how you want it to look like and you don't know how to get there, then it's time to reach out, right? And then the other part of this is the what would you tell a friend, right? Or maybe a family member, a loved one. And my guys all say the exact same thing. If your son, daughter, brother, sister came up to you and said, hey, I'm really struggling, but man, I really don't want to go to therapy. What do you think? They all say, go. Well, don't you think I'm a bad person or a weak person for needing therapy? No. And one of the biggest problems that I see is that we are great advice givers. We show so much love and compassion and understanding to everybody but ourselves. So you can go, Michael, that's great. That's great that you go to therapy, that you have the maturity to understand that you can't do it alone. That's great. I'm special though. So if I go to therapy, it's just a moral failing on my part. But you're great for it. Applaud? No, that's BS. It doesn't work like that. So what would you tell a friend? Would you support a friend if they said, I need some help that I can't do this on my own? What do you think? Man, that's what a mature person does. They ask for help when they need it. And I don't know if you have kids or not, but I've got a six and a 3-year-old. And one thing I always tell them is like, it's okay to ask for help. My 3-year-old's in an I do it stage. I do it. I do. Okay. It's okay to ask people for help. Not just okay, but you're going to achieve more if you do. If there's something that's missing, something that you want and you don't know how to get it, there is no shame in asking for help. I would say the opposite is true. There is maybe some shame by just choosing ego and pride over progress.
Thank you for that. I think that's super insightful. My last question for you is, what does faith mean to you, and how does that tie in with a lot of the clients that you see find that healing? Is faith usually a factor in that?
You talking of a religious sense
Yeah,
or?
whatever you believe in.
I remember there's a book that one of my grad school professors wrote about the different, like when psychology and religion were kind of butting heads, because they said, religion's like, no, you believe. Psychology's like, no, you test it out and you find out. And what I've come to find is they can be very complementary if you allow it to. And so the guys of mine that do have a religious faith, they can use that. Now, if their religious faith is like super, super strict, very rigid, it usually causes problems. Because, oh no, I sinned. Yeah, everyone sinned. Oh, but I, well, what happened as a kid when you sin? I got crap beaten out of me. Okay, so if it's super, super strict, then I do see it causing more problems until they can kind of loosen up on some of those things. And you know, like I always use the example as like, is your understanding of God, whatever that God or that deity is, would they forgive you? Oh yeah. Yeah, they'd forgive me. Infinite love. Okay, but you won't forgive yourself. No. So you know better than God. Well, I didn't say that. Yeah, you did. You did say, and so kind of a little trick there. But it I do see it as complementary, you know, because it's the belief of I can do this. I don't need all the answers right now. I just have to have faith that if I start and I trust someone or something, that I can have what I want. If you don't have that trust or faith or hope to begin with, it's a lot longer road.
Yeah, one of the programs that I've heard of is called Regeneration. It's a Christian-based program, but it is a 12-step program where you don't have to walk in there with some massive addiction. You can walk in there with just self-serving, self-centered motives in your life and say, "Hey, I want to heal from this." And you know, a lot of people walk in there and they're not Christians and they leave and then they become Christians just based on that healing process they were able to see. And I know it's different for everyone, but if I had more resources, I would share them. But the one that I do know is Regeneration. It's usually hosted at various churches all across the nation.
Yeah, a lot of your church groups have specific to pornography or lust, or just overall recovery or support, you know, past addiction, whatnot. And a lot of them say, look, I don't care if you believe in the same God that I believe in. Do you want help? And when they've done studies on happiness, and this was a long time ago, so I'd have to relook at the study, but they said that people who go to church are happier than people who don't, not necessarily for the reason that they have different belief or faith, but just the community. And so, yeah, of course, you know, one of the highest correlations of happiness is the quality of your interpersonal relationships. And if I have a place to go where people are nice to me, well, yeah, duh, of course you're happier. You have a place that you feel like you can belong, that you belong, people are nice to you, you're welcome there, you're safe. And so, regardless of if you do have that Christian faith or not, check out some of these groups, whether faith-based, non-faith-based, and that community is so incredibly important. Without it, you can only do so much in a therapy session.
Yeah, and if you go to one and you don't like it, you don't have to go back. So I think that's where people hesitate or maybe use that as an excuse of like, well, I don't know if I'm gonna like it. It's like, if you don't, just don't go back.
Worst case, it's one night out of your week that no, I always tell people no is an answer. It's not a wasted night. Just don't go there again. But now you know, and now you're not sitting, oh, what if, what if, what? Go do it. Go find out. Go find out if that group's for you. I was in a small group the last church we attended. Never once did I walk in there and say, who do you believe in? They all said, hey, how are you? I'm so and so. And then we talked, hung out. So check them out. Worst case scenario, it's not for you. Great. Go find something different.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Gary. This has been a wonderful and very, very much so a learning experience for me. So, is there anything else that you want to share before we jump off of here?
You know, other than I wish it was more common that people talked about being in therapy. It seems like I'm in therapy, but that's private. Why? Why? You go to your doctor when you're sick and you tell people, oh yeah, I had this, so I went to my doctor again on antibiotics. What about when you're sad? Why can't we talk about that? I always tell people, if you are in therapy, per your level of, you know, comfort with it, talk to people about it. Or maybe talk to some of your close loved ones. And a lot of my guys say the same thing. When I do, it's always met well. And I found out that a lot of my friends are also in therapy. But we're told that, shh, especially us guys, shh, don't do that.
Yeah, it took me a
So.
bit to talk about it for myself, but since I decided probably 2 years ago that what am I ashamed of, or am I even ashamed of anything? Like, this is really helpful. So now, you know, I've actually been able to recommend a dozen different people to my therapist, and some of them have gone, some of them haven't, but the ones that did, you know, they felt better than they did before. You know, it could be any therapist, but just sharing that experience alone could easily help someone. You don't have to ask them to go to therapy. You can say, hey, I'm in therapy. This is what I learned, or this is how I got better. And maybe all you do is make a statement, and that statement can resonate with someone.
No, I when I went to counseling myself for some issues I was having during COVID times, I would tell people, I was like, oh yeah, I went to counseling. And they go, you? You? I said, yeah, I'm not gonna like come to you. I used to coach volleyball. It's like, I'm not gonna come and coach the girls, from 6 to 8 and be like, oh, I don't feel appreciated. All right. No. They said, Gary, you seem so happy. I said, I am. I said, but I also have things that I need to work on. And even as a counselor, physician, heal thyself. I can't just fix everything. And so I would talk to people and they would go, oh. And in that, I'm hoping that they would also hear, you're also allowed to go.
I think that's a good way to end it right there. So, if you're struggling out there, and you need someone, or you need something to change or give in your life, reach out to someone. Doesn't matter who, just reach out. But thank you so much, Gary. I really appreciate you. Once more, name of your practice.
Aletheia Counseling TX, and you can find my website at aletheiacounselingtx.com, aletheiacounselingtx.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.